Welcome back to the Diplomat's Cabinet. At a rate comparable to the Industrial Revolution, artificial intelligence is transforming institutions and economies and societies in ways that we can't really predict. What we do know is the gap between those who are influencing these technologies and those who are most impacted by them widens as their influence increases. So this raises an urgent question. Who is AI really serving? The founder of She Shapes AI, Dr. Julia Stamm, joins the Diplomat's Cabinet in this episode to talk about how inclusion needs to be a structural principle in AI governance rather than just an afterthought. Her research emphasizes the ways in which power disparities and geography and gender are ingrained in the creation of new technologies and the implications for international accountability and trust at a time of such, geopolitical uncertainty and so on. The discussion looks at the economic and political ramifications of an even AI leadership, as well as what would be necessary to guarantee that the upcoming technological era is both inventive and representative. Join me in welcoming Julia, and let's get started. So let me begin by saying that artificial intelligence is transforming society. But the benefits and risks of this transformation are unevenly distributed. And so today we welcome you, Dr. Julia Stamm. You are the founder of She Shapes AI, and you strongly advocate for an intentional rebalancing in AI design, leadership, deployment, to ensure that these new technologies serve society, and especially those most often left behind. Because this is such a, it is kind of, unless you are a guru, you would say that this is a new topic. And a ton of people are feeling, they feel anxious, maybe because they don't understand what's going on. Maybe it's because we're moving too fast. So my first question is, and this is the easiest question, do you feel optimistic or anxious with all these AI developments?
It's a good question. It's not an easy question, but it's a good question. I would say I feel neither anxious nor overly enthusiastic. I really think that we are in a situation where AI can do a lot of very, very positive things for us. We can do a lot of very positive things with us, but I think it's up to us to really shape the way the technology is taking and what we're using it for and what we're developing it for. So at She Shapes AI, I'm always saying, we are really advocating for the middle ground. We're not saying AI is going to kill all of us and the robots will come and overwhelm us. Or it's also not the silver bullet for everything. It's not going to solve all our problems, because at the end of the day, it's a technology, right? And it comes back to what we're doing with it. And I think we're not utilizing it to its fullest capacities. I actually think we're underutilizing it by focusing in particular on increasing productivity, efficiency, but we're not using it to help us address, some of the really important complex problems that our societies are facing. This is one of the things we're trying to tackle with She Shapes AI, is to really think about how are we actually using a technology in a way that it helps us to build a better future. And to me, that is really the focus point of everything. Why are we building technologies? Yet to make our life easier, but also to make our lives better. And ultimately, right, this is what we're trying to advocate for. So yes, I understand a lot of anxiety, but also there's a lot of unknown about how the technology works, right? We're still very early in the process. We still have to do a lot of education, a lot of training, a lot of explaining. But there's also, I would say, a lot of hype that we're seeing, where we're being told mythical and magical stories about what these technologies can do for us, which I think, also requires to step back and be a little rational, and look about, okay, what is it that we actually want?
Why did you feel the need to place gender at the forefront of the AI discussion? Because that's obviously, the whole bias and inclusion has different sides to it, but why did you feel the need to place gender at the forefront?
To me, it was about showing that what we're currently seeing in terms of AI development and deployment is only part of the story. Like, the people that we're seeing in the media, in the newspapers, talking about their tools, actually sharing their tools with us, or we're using them, are very specific demography. You know, I mean, we know it, right? Very male, very white, very often from the United States. And obviously, this also influences the way these technologies are being built, you know, everything that goes into their development and deployment. And I have thought that this can't be the full story that we're seeing, right? It all comes back to bringing many, many different perspectives into the way we're actually developing technologies. This is not only the case for AI, but it's, you know, the case for technology across the board. And through my work, I've been working in entrepreneurship, innovation, research for many, many, many years. I have actually seen amazing women leading the way in tech development and also AI development. But there is a mismatch because you know that these ladies are there, but they're somehow hidden. They do not get to the forefront. They do not get the spotlight. Or a range of reasons, and we can discuss this. But clearly, they are there. And what I want to do with She Shapes AI is to also sort of clear the myth to say there are no women in the space. And, you know, it is, you know, it's yes, it's a field dominated by men, but there's amazing work being done by female leaders, female entrepreneurs. And so what She Shapes AI, the idea really is to say, we show that these women are there. We talk about what they are developing. We focus on, you know, the development of AI that is responsible, that is ethical, that is empathetic, that puts care in communities at the forefront. As we think, you know, as I mentioned earlier, this is about thinking what we want to use this technology for. And I know many women who are putting this center stage when they're developing these technologies. And so She Shapes AI, the focus on gender, is first and foremost a need to bring in many different perspectives into the development of the technologies, because I think we're really at a tipping point here. And if we want to create a future where AI delivers on this potential, as we've discussed initially, right, where it works for everyone, we have to ensure that it is also shaped by many and not just a few. And this is why we're stepping in.
Women make up just 29% of the AI skilled workforce, correct me if I'm wrong, and only 10% of AI executive leadership. If I were to ask for evidence that women are essential and that women bring unique perspectives and benefits, what would you say?
What I do not want to say is that women are the only ones who are actually caring or who are having empathy, right? This is clearly not what I want to say. But we know that when women develop technology and technological solution, they very often focus on addressing concrete problems, right? Because oftentimes women are anchored very much in concrete data realities in communities, and they see where it hurts, right? And then they think about ways to actually address these. And they're also thinking about ways to address problems that, you know, other people would not necessarily think about because they do not have, you know, these daily realities, very different daily realities. You know, this is what I was saying. When we're talking about developing technologies, we have to bring in a rainbow of different perspectives, because we want to ultimately address many different problems, and people experience problems differently. You know, for someone, it might be an issue that is not an issue for someone else. And so what we're seeing also in development, in tech development and AI development, is that women focus on problems that are also problems for others, right? And then they will be developing solutions for these problems. But these problems then very often have issues to actually get to the market, because they're not being seen as very relevant. They're not being seen as lucrative, although they would be, because they're tapping into markets that are as of yet undiscovered or untapped. But I think it also, you know, it's very much of a mentality change. Also, when women develop technology solutions, oftentimes they are more concerned about the need to put in guardrails and to think about what is actually going into these technologies. You know, what kind of data are we using? Who might we be hurting, right? It's sometimes more of a systemic understanding also. If I'm fixing these issues, will this have implications on other areas? I think it's oftentimes maybe a broader approach also when it comes to problem solving. A higher probability to actually flag risks, you know, biases, or to design solutions in an inclusive way from the outset. And so I think we just can't afford not to have women in the picture and supporting women at innovations.
So if AI biases reflect human biases, I guess the worst case scenario would be that the systems that we're building will just replicate harmful stereotypes, inaccurate systems and tools for people to use. What are some of the consequences of bad AI tech? What could possibly be the worst case scenario if we don't take into consideration diverse perspectives and, you know, you just highlighted the importance of women's leadership?
First, what I would say is that these are not abstract consequences or implications. They're very, very concrete. And you can already see this, you know, when AI is being used, for instance, for recruitment, you know, what kind of CVs are being put forward, you know, to an interview stage, for instance. It all depends on the data that the system has been fed. And if the data has been fed on a particular demography of previous candidates, right, it will not suddenly change its mind and forward or promote others. And because systems that, you know, tend to be built with a very, in hiring, for instance, we had analysis that, for instance, resumes by women are rejected 30 times more than the resumes of men. But this is not just, this is because of the data that went into this, right? This is an algorithmic decision based on data. And here we always have to bring the human component and see how can we change this. If, however, we will have more diverse teams that are actually building these algorithms, right? There would be someone who said, let's maybe pay attention to all of these factors. We would be able to avoid some of these really dangerous precedents. Another one, there is this woman, there is this book that is just sitting across the Invisible Women by this wonderful author that I'm for sure will be mispronouncing. Miss Criado Perez, you know, it was published in 2019. And basically, it explains how then we're living in a world built by men and for men. And this also goes back to, you know, health diagnosis. And then obviously, if we're feeding AI tools and scanners in the health domain with data that has been captured by men or collected from male patients, and obviously there will be wrong diagnosis for the women. So it is actually something that has very tangible consequences, you know. And it's not only a question of women, it's a question of making sure that we have all constituencies and all kinds of population, you know, this very important qualitative data being fed into the machines, and that there's always a check by someone who can then take a look and see what else might we need. Right? We also need to go back to the data collection to think about what is the solution that we actually want to find for what kind of problem. And in order to find the solution for the specific kind of problem that we want to address, what kind of data do we need? Is the data that we're having enough? Do we need to find other data? How do we get it? So it's not just, you know, it's not just this nice idea of giving all of this to an AI tool, but it's really starting from scratch, starting also from asking the right questions and then understanding what kind of input do I need in order to get the output, that I ideally want to have.
If you could advise either, you're based in London, so if you could advise the UK government or the UN on one policy direction at this stage, what would it be? Do you have any, I don't know, idea? I know the economic side of this discussion will get there. It is very important. If you could advise governments on one policy direction at this stage, so 2025, let's prevent things from getting worse before it's too late, what would you say?
I mean, I think what we have not yet talked about is the trust issue and the trust gap, right? We're facing a technology that is getting adopted by more and more people, but this does not mean that more people trust the technology. No, on the contrary, the trust gap is actually increasing. And the majority of people is very skeptical about the possible implications of this technology on the ways their life will be unfolding, on their jobs, on, you know, systems that surround them, on their financial security. And so I think this is something that governments have to face head on. And this is true for both men and women, but women tend to distrust the technology even less than men. And there was an interesting study published, I think, just last week, the AI Compass, and they basically looked at Californians. It was a survey of Californians and focus groups. And they say, yes, there is initially some optimism around the potential for innovation. However, people really across the board are very concerned about who will benefit at the end of the day. And I think it's going to benefit the wealthy and it's going to benefit corporations. And only a small majority, I think it was about 20%, say it's going to benefit working people. And what is also interesting is across the board, no matter their AI literacy, level or the educational level, women tend to be even more cautious. And this brings me to another element. You know, very often we're talking about the women having to pick up the AI train, have to skill up more, and all of this is true. But I also would say, you know, there is women are very often asking, what am I using the technology for? Maybe there are areas where I think it's maybe not that helpful for me, or I don't want this for reason X, Y, Z. And I think we should not always say this is, you know, this very careful approach is necessarily bad. I would say it's something that would benefit all of us to sometimes be a little more critical or reflective or thoughtful about, you know, just jumping ahead and using it just because we can.
That's such an interesting point. I had never considered the trust angle and how governments are not working to fix that. That's such an important point.
And if I can just go back to this item, when we're going back to the study I was referencing, is that people expect government to take action to regulate, but they do not trust the governments to take the concrete and correct action to actually regulate and put in the guardrails. So if you're asking me about what needs to be tackled, yes, the trust issue, and explain to people that you're taking it seriously.
This is a broader question, but how would you fix the trust in government, especially when it comes to AI? Because so there are two issues here. The government is not doing enough, and people also don't trust the government. And we see that across the world, at least across the Western world. The OECD has a ton of studies on this. Do you have any, it could be just a thought. Do you have any ideas on how you would bridge government and people? Because I think that's a key issue here.
I think government also needs to have an open ear to citizens and to listen actually to their concerns and not try to be in a bubble and taking decisions that maybe are unrelated to people's reality, right? So I would say there's a lot to be said for open consultations, focus groups, getting a better understanding of what people are actually fearing and when and under which circumstances they might be supportive of actually using a technology. So it is, I think it's actually finding ways to overcome this gap between a policy context that for many people feels very far away and very detached from their daily lives. And this is not just, you know, true for tech, but in general, right? We're seeing this sort of this felt detachment, but really trying to find ways to show people that, yes, we understand your realities. We understand what you're facing. And also, for instance, I think many people feel that AI will take away their jobs. Whether this is correct or not is another story, but there is this fear, there's this anxiety. And I do not yet see governments taking serious action to actually anticipate and to explain to citizens, listen, we have a plan. We know what we're doing. We will take care of this. And this is our plan over the next couple of years. So I think there is a lot of need for communication, for talking, for actually finding platforms and forums to bring those, you know, civil society and government closer to each other.
You mentioned the fact that people may feel like AI is a very abstract issue, but we are starting to see some news on how real it's getting. And one of the ways we see that is when we read about, you know, job disruption due to AI. So the exclusion of women from AI is also an economic issue. There is a potential $7 trillion gain in global GDP if gender equality is advanced. Mm-hmm. So the question, I will ask the opposite question: how does the underrepresentation of women hurt economic progress?
I mean, it's something that is fairly established. You know, there are many studies that actually talk about how diverse teams improve performances. I mean, revenue performances. Also, it's very obvious. I was attending a summit a couple of weeks ago, and the gentleman was talking about how in his teams, there are always men and women working on products. Because he said it would be very stupid to only have men or only have women working on a product because we would be forgetting about half of the population, right? It's a market. It's also a market reality. It's a market advantage if I'm addressing a broad pool of clients. That's the first thing. And the second is also if you're not supporting women and women's innovation, we're actually missing out again on an amazing array of solutions that again could be, you know, relevant for many, many people and could be bought by many people. So this is where the economies come in. So it's not just about you know, we need to promote more women and more female innovators because it's the right thing to do and the nice thing to do. No, also because it's economically smart and what you need to do. If I can just bounce back on our previous discussion, because it's an important one, what government can do. Compared to talking about the potential job losses, right? For instance, there are a lot of companies who are talking about, anyway, to eliminate jobs through AI, right? And talking about eliminating all jobs, there was an interesting podcast in the New York Times. And when I listened to these gentlemen, and these are gentlemen, right? Relatively young tech entrepreneurs from Silicon Valley, who I don't think have a lot of international experience or real life experience, right? And they are going out there and they talk openly about, we want to eliminate all jobs because then it's going to be fabulous and growth and happiness for everyone. Right. And here I really see a responsibility for governments to jump in to say, listen, who gave you the authority to make these decisions? Right. And this is obviously in America, but still, I think, you know, there is sort of, we need to have more of this discussion. We need to have more of these provocative exchanges and not just like look at this open-eyed and a little afraid, but say, listen, this is just not okay.
And speaking of Silicon Valley and entrepreneurship, we were just talking about this before we started recording. And that would be the fact that only 2% of VC funding goes to all female teams, despite startups led by women often outperforming, or even if they didn't outperform, why does the funding gap persist?
It is very important to understand who currently holds the checkbook, who holds the money right now. And if you're looking at who is actually investing, the majority are men, I think 85%, right, according to PitchBook, most recent stats. And, you know, you see this all over the place. Investors look for patterns, they look for successful patterns, they look for what they funded in the past and what, you know, was able to scale. And so basically they funded men in the past, they were successful, so they will fund men in the future. All male teams, I think, are 4 times more likely to get funded than all women teams, which is an issue. And another issue also, when teams are mixed, the men are being punished for actually joining forces with women. And they are, for them, you know, they're less likely to get funding, while the women are more likely to get funding because the man is on board. So that is an issue as well. Another problem also is that investment very often goes back to who do I know, who is in my network, who refers me to someone. So it's these warm intros and the networks of, you know, male founders, warm intros, VC deals, it's just much better. Women very often lack access to these networks, which also means that, you know, getting access to funding is really, really difficult for them.
I just have one last question, split into two tiny questions. What advice do you have for women and girls considering a path in AI? And for the allies who may want to support them.
Okay, so for women and girls, go for it. We need you. We definitely do, right? We want to shape this future together. A lot is at stake. There's a lot of potential. There's a lot of fabulous stuff. It's very exciting, right? It's a very exciting moment in time also. I think we can't underline this enough. There are a lot of opportunities. So do not think that you have nothing to add. You have to. I always like to talk about the fact that, yes, we do need the developers, we do need the coders, we need to have the people who actually understands what happenings in the system, but we also need to have the people who bring in, you know, the lived experiences and the realities, because ultimately, what is the technology if you can't apply it in a way that is beneficial? So go for it, train, find interesting circles that are relevant to you, find role models, don't be shy. And clearly never say, I do not belong in this world or I have nothing to add. And for the allies, look around you and see what you can do to support women-led AI innovation and what you can do also, you know, priorities to support women who might want to be in tech. You know, open your checkbooks if you have one, or refer female innovators to people who have an open checkbook. Talk about it, write about it, make sure that you lead by example when you're organizing panels, events. Make sure you have women there and don't hide behind the fact that there are only very few women in tech. So I just don't find the ones that can talk. No, that's not true. Just search a little more. You'll find them. Yes, just be open, be willing to surprise, to be surprised as well. Yes, really help us rewrite the story of the technology in a way that really works for everyone.
So much food for thought and kind advice from someone who would know a thing or two about a path in AI, Dr. Julia Stems. Thank you so much for your time. I learned a lot and I do feel a bit more optimistic just for the fact that we have had a conversation and we have highlighted some of these key points. I feel just a tiny bit more optimistic. And so I think this also highlights the fact that it's so important to have conversations about what we don't understand, how we can act on it. And I hope people feel the same way when they listen to this conversation.
Thanks very much. Thanks for having me. I've really enjoyed the conversation. And yes, thank you for your work as well and explaining and providing this forum, Maria.
Thank you for listening and for supporting the Diplomat's Cabinet podcast. If you found this conversation insightful, share this episode with your network and don't forget to subscribe to the newsletter at thediplomatscabinet.com. Until next time.